Well, I think that we will also provide a window of opportunity for the audience, for you to address and to ask questions to the authors and or the panel. I think, I mean, we've covered many subjects here, but I mean, the issue of learning, I mean, whether we know what we're doing innate and whether we learn from what we're doing, I mean, it's fundamental, and not just to aid. I mean, it's to every aspect of public policy, basically. It's just, it seems that we're much more eager to find out within aid. I mean, EBA, we published a report 3 years ago where we looked at the number of evaluations being performed in 1 year within the aid field, and it was 267 in 2013, and then counting also with CSOs evaluation. So, I mean, apparently evaluation as a field is alive and well. And
it's alive anyway.
It's alive anyway. So anyone who would like to comment or elaborate on a point or violently oppose something? Lennart, yes.
Okay. My name is Lennart Peck, working at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. First of all, thanks for the report. I thought it was really stimulating, not the least because it forces you really to think about these things on accountability and learning, which, as we've been talking about, can mean so many different things. I can personally think of a lot of cases where I've really seen this tension. I think it's easy, Evert, to agree with you with this ideal of keeping it separate. The thing is, what I find happens often is that even if you set out to have a real learning evaluation, but if you then discover that this was a lousy project, then immediately things start happen, or similarly, if you discover that this was a really great success, then this learning evaluation tends to move over to accountability anyway. And similarly, even if you start out with an accountability evaluation, I mean, you always tend to learn something, and well, then it's a positive spin-off. So I think somehow, yes, there is a tension, but really, it seems that we are somehow stuck with this together still.
Sort of, it is really two sides of the same coin. That's the title for the seminar. So, yes, please.
I'm Annika Nilsson. I'm also an independent evaluator for a long time. I am wondering if you studied the OECD DAC criteria, which are agreed to be, I mean, the guiding all evaluations, if these criteria anyway guides towards accountability by the mere questions that they're posing, or that maybe they are... did you reflect on those criteria? That's my question.
My name is Helena Bjurman. I work at International IDEA. I have a question for whoever feels inclined to answer. I didn't hear any of you, and I didn't see much in the report relating to why learning doesn't happen with things, with the aspects such as organizational culture, organizational incentives, organizational dynamics, both with the partner country or the partner organization and with the donor agency. So if you have something... you can contribute to that. That would be helpful, in particular if you have ideas on how we can change that. So whatever the format or content of the evaluation report will actually be, whatever you know, is absorbed or used or taken up, whatever the metaphor would be. Thank you.
My name is Katarina Schmitz. I'm from NIRAS also. I just have a short question. You mentioned that you think that the terms and references is setting very strongly the frame for what you can do in the evaluation, but did you look at it upon, is it giving opportunities for a learning process? Because a learning process, as far as I understand, where people learn and change their minds needs a different process, a longer process, needs more more time to reflect and so on. Did you look at it from that perspective, if it's given an opportunity for this process to happen?
Rolf Sandalet, ja. My question is actually, is your question really interesting? I mean, two sides of the same coin. Maybe it's the wrong coin at all. I mean, the main question should be, what kind of knowledge do we really like to know? And is evaluation actually given that kind of knowledge? It could be like, maybe there's nothing to learn from the evaluations. And there's also, of course, a lot of different people, as Joachim said, on different levels. So, I mean, in my world, you should start with what is actually interesting to know, and then you should see, is evaluation that kind of information usually, or should we have other kind of information, research, and so on. So, and you also learn a lot, of course, from accountability. I don't know if the question at all is relevant. I mean, you always learn something. We haven't defined learning, so it's difficult to say. But learning accountability is also one of the purposes for evaluation. So I think you should start somewhere else with what kind of knowledge do we actually want to know, instead of saying, as I said, maybe it's just the wrong coin.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, my name is Gustav Peterson, and I'm from the Swedish Research Council. And I'm interested in you're saying that you don't really want to define what you mean by learning in this context. And I mean, there are several different distinctions that are made in the evaluation literature that perhaps could have been interesting to bring up. And I mean, one classic distinction is between internal and external validity, which would perhaps could be used to capture and structure many of the things that are being said here. Because, as Lennart Peck pointed out, if you are doing an evaluation for accountability purposes, of course you need to learn a lot, in particular about what actually happened. But if you're interested primarily in learning for coming evaluations, then rather the external validity would be of interest. What can you take away from what happened in this case that is actually transferable knowledge to other similar contexts and other similar evaluations? I mean, this distinction between internal and external validity would perhaps be in a way to distinguish between different kinds of learning. And there is, of course, a huge literature on this distinction, going from the Campbell and Cook, Campbell on the one hand, to the Paulson and well, the other. Yeah. I have a question also. And the question is to Evert Vedung and Joachim Olander. It seems to me that you end up in partly different conclusions. As I understand you, Evert, you say for ideal type purposes and for learning purposes you should keep accountability evaluation and learning evaluation separate. And as I understand you, Joachim, you are saying that in some levels of this hierarchy that you are showing, the two should be aligned, or they could be aligned at least. So it would be very interesting if you would comment on each other's presentations. Thank you.
Okay, I think we'll... Okay, yes, sorry.
My name is Asif, and I have 15 years' experience working in the development economy as a development economist. So I work with the Ministry of Finance, starting with the Asian Development Bank. I designed the monitoring system and performance system for ADB, and work with the UN, UNDP in Europe for a very, very long time. And thank you for listening to all the things that we were just discussing, that it's the old wheel that we are inventing, which has now become a coin. It's nice. Suggestion for the researchers, can we start from the beginning, 1960s, and everything has gone up, so things have progressed a lot during the years, from agriculture economy to knowledge economy, innovation economy, so evaluation in terms of, we now say it's a network economy in which the development evaluation has contributed a lot for the betterment of the life of the people. So the objective of the evaluation is to build strong evidence base, which sometimes are missing. So whenever anyone is doing evaluation, it should have a strong evidence base, so we have a learning that is coming up. And that learning is basically going into a system where we design better policies and reforms for the governments, for aid agencies, organizations, and governments. So we need to first understand the roles of evaluation, that what kind of evidence we would be getting it out. So it should be taught in the universities as well, that why we need to do evaluations and what is the outcome, the end user as well. And finally, in the end, my question and suggestion is that we should encourage good practices. When I do evaluation for UN agency, I fight that. In the end, we should have good practices coming out. It should not be monitoring. Evaluation meal is not policing. Meal is there to help us understand the whole process, the evaluations, the accountability, and the learnings, and on basis of which we can design new, better policies and reforms that can support and strengthen the government and aid institutions. So I would suggest you look at that part, the good side as well, the success stories as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, I think these last couple of interventions have also pointed to evaluations being just a base for something. It's not an evaluation in itself, but it's a building stone for doing better work. So I think I will let you comment on some of the questions. Evert, would you like to start?
I'll try to be short. Lennart Beck, I think he disappeared. I'm absorbing his question that way. Learning evaluation may turn into accountability, because if you discover some inefficiencies in the organization that you're evaluating, then you must try to correct it. And this implies leadership. You must have strong leaders. And that's why, for the evaluation that is, but also for the evaluated intervention, that's why I argue for that the chairperson of the program, the leader of the program, should also be the leader of the evaluation. Because in the last 2 years, where I have been experimenting with this, keeping accountability and learning apart, we have discovered things that must be learned during the process. And then you have to create ideas, and you have to do discussions and so on, and you need leadership in order to do that. I'm trying to answer your question. I think that's enough.
Thank you. Joachim.
Yes, someone said there are many questions, but maybe one way to put it is also, I was thinking, a lot of the questions came to, you know, how do you use evaluations and what's the purpose, etc. And I think at CEDA, at least, we try to work with all evaluations from a Michael Quinn Patton's theory about utilization use of evaluations. And that means that you should always try to define the intended use for the intended users of the particular evaluation. And we try to do that. We're not always successful. But I think that can sort out some of the questions, because if you're clear about what the particular evaluation is for and who is going to use it, you can also be more clear about the learning and accountability dimensions of it. I think some of our work, and that was what I was trying to say with the pyramid also, is mostly or completely learning-centered, as you were saying, Evert. And that is the bottom of the pyramid. As I said, that's where most of the monitoring and evaluation takes place. As I said, 4,000 projects with their monitoring and evaluation systems. And many of them are designed for learning purposes for the partner only, and they don't even report everything to the donor. So there is not much of an accountability function with many of those systems. And I've even been experimenting myself with changing the name to learning-based management systems, and where actually also no report is written, and it's more of a reflection process that is stimulated by asking questions and gathering data. So we do that already. I think it's a good recommendation. We could do it more. But we do it already, and in particular at the bottom of the pyramid. But if you go to the top of the pyramid and intended use and intended users, to respond a little bit to Gustav's question also, I think sometimes maybe learning and accountability is difficult if it's the same intended users who should learn and be held accountable. Then you run into a dilemma for sure. But with many of the top of the pyramid evaluations, you might have an intended user who is a policymaker, and the ones who are accountable are maybe implementers in the field. And then I don't really see a problem. The implementers should be held to account for how they used Swedish funds, for example, and if they did it well and with good reflection, etc. And learnings can be generated upwards. Did we learn something important in this particular with this particular project or intervention? I was thinking of two evaluations that I can remember that played this role very clearly. It was a joint evaluation of the response to the tsunami, for example. I don't remember how many donors were involved. I think around 10. And there was a strong accountability focus and a strong criticism on how much of the humanitarian assistance to the tsunami response was carried out. But at the same time, it generated a lot of learnings that are now used in how to link humanitarian assistance with long-term development. But there were different stakeholders, different people who learned and others who were held accountable. So I think that is quite possible.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Per, please.
Yeah, maybe more a comment to Evert. The idea of separating evaluations for accountability and evaluations for learning. Do you think it's possible to do evaluations for accountability in a system like this? Who is held accountable for anything at all? I mean, you have people rotating to different positions. You have maybe a four-year term for government. So when you're doing an evaluation, and I mean, can you even think of an accountability evaluation? In my view, all evaluations have aspects of accountability, but more and more focus on learning. That's why we are, what you mentioned, Cecilia, about ownership of the whole process, the relevance of the topic being evaluated, the timeliness of presenting the recommendations, the involvement of stakeholders in all parts of the process, the workshop related to formulating recommendations, again, to create ownership. They're all meant to help learning in the organization, while the starting point is often a combination of accountability and learning. And the effort is to... there is a lot of learning in the MFA in Norway, but it's primarily individual learning. So what we're trying to do is to make this into a more systematic process of organizational learning. And that's also why we're focusing more on synthesis reports, trying to draw together knowledge from different type of products, including research, to make this more explicit, the knowledge that needs to be built into this. But then, so again, this is a strong focus for us, but is it possible in this system to do only evaluations for accountability? To me, that's...
I was thinking of financial auditing, for instance. In the cases I've been involved in, the financial auditing has been on the side of this other evaluation only for accounting, for learning. Financial auditing can be made, you know, how money is used, is used wrongly or rightly and so on. Mm-hmm. And I think that's... And you can put somebody to account for that. And these accountability people coming from Brussels and Stockholm, they have also put, actually, people to account for that. You have to change this system. You have to change it. You are doing it wrongly. So there has been an accountability... It's possible to have an accountability function at the side of, so to say, a learning function. I come up with another idea that you should have taken, done. This is another thing. I came up with another idea. When you were thinking about thematic evaluation, that's a very good idea. There are some programs, there are some family resemblances among programs. The Wittgensteinian idea of family resemblances, or in the evaluation business, we also talk about archetypes archetypes of programs. You could have worked more with this in your report here. For instance, some programs can be ordered according to policy instruments used. Some programs are informational programs, some are, you know, money programs, and some are regulatory programs and so on. And some programs are detectors and some are effectors. By any detective program, I mean programs collecting information for future use, statistical collecting detective program. And they have a particular logic, and effector programs, then you want to impress something upon society. Mm-hmm. So you could have used more this thematic idea, and in the continuation of that archetype idea or family resemblance idea in your report here, in order to enhance utilization, because I think it is an instrument to utilize, mm-hmm. to enhance utilization. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Well, this is fascinating. I mean, how we package and how we label the subject that we evaluate, I mean, will also influence uptake, most likely. Yes, Desmond, you also wanted to.
I would like to respond to Per Eivind's comments, which are fairly strong counterblast to the report. I mean, I won't try and cover all the points, but two, I mean, firstly, I feel... Actually, I feel sad because I think you've misread what we're trying to do. I feel sad because I think you may be closing off an opportunity for a genuinely useful, constructive debate. Because actually, I think you and I think quite alike about a lot of these issues, and it may be that it's simply a misunderstanding. We are not doing an evaluation of Norwegian evaluation reports. We're looking at a structural issue, which there's huge evidence that this is a powerful structural issue. When you say, I don't understand how there can be a contradiction, we are not saying we looked at 40 reports, or six in from Norway, and found this contradiction. No, there's a huge literature on this, which we quote, and most of the people in the reference group, several of them senior people who had been previously heads of evaluations, said, yes, indeed, we have troubled with this, we have striven with this problem. So, I mean, I don't think there can be any doubt. We can debate whether it's a contradiction or a tension or whatever, but to say there is no issue at all, to say that you don't understand that, I find deeply troubling. But as I say, I don't want this to be a confrontation, because I genuinely think that we have similar views, and I think there must be some misunderstanding about precisely what it is we're trying to achieve.
Okay, thank you. I think we'll now get into sort of the awkward time of a seminar when we have to start managing time. So I think, I mean, we have something like 5 more minutes for our discussion. So if you have some sharp questions or comments, please prepare them now and expect a very short and sharp answer. Yes, Cecilia, you wanted to...
At the end of your presentation, you said that it's important to discuss the trade-off. And I think that is a very important point, that when evaluations are commissioned, to look at that, what weight we give them, and they may end up being different at the end. But also, if... the accountability aspect detracts from the learning aspect in an evaluation. It would be, and I'm, you know, presenting this question just generally to everyone here, but if evaluation questions, if the accountability detracts, then regular studies that aid organizations produce would be better at ensuring learning in the organization. And I'd be interested to know, is that the case? Or actually, because there is an accountability aspect, that evaluations do create more, that learning actually is forwarded because there is accountability built into the whole evaluation system. So just a food for thought there.
Okay, yeah. No, thank you. And in fact, then accountability is then the prerequisite for learning in a sense. which means that they sort of intrinsically, I mean, they tie together. And, okay, Hilde.
Thank you. I would just like to respond to some of the questions from the audience. There were quite a lot of questions there at the first round. So first of all, this question of why learning doesn't happen. We didn't study that as such, but we just note that both in publications and among our informants, there was this clear message that learning is very hard to achieve on this domestic level, what we would dub big learning, as also the panel has discussed now. It's learning may very well happen on this decentralized, local, sideways level, whereas accumulating knowledge, synthesizing, that's challenging. And it's been efforts going into this for a long time, and it's still sort of a major issue. As for the DAC criteria, yes, that's absolutely a part of the empirical material that we looked into. So that's covered in the report. It could have been more, as with all the empirical parts. It's we could definitely have looked more at DAC as such, but we focused mostly on how the Norwegian and Swedish similar documents of aid guidelines and so forth quotes DAC and then sort of translates it further into their systems. Then the question from from the Research Council. We have quite an extensive discussion of this internal external validity. We don't call it validity as such, but it's a tension and effects that they have, that the different different ways or the different logics of the internal and external is extremely important. So we definitely organize not the entire report, but a lot of our analysis goes exactly on that sort of axis, absolutely. So I agree with you completely. And then the question of what kind of knowledge you produce, that's a great question. And indeed, the two sides of the same coin formulation is not, we don't use it in the report, but we note that it's being used by actors in the field, especially in the recent OECD report and Asian Development Bank. They use this phrase very much. Let's see, there was one more. The terms of reference, yes. Well, one of the reports that we go into some detail in the report is a joint evaluation. So we have a sample of Swedish, sample of Norwegian, but also two joint evaluations by Norway and Sweden, or Norad and SIDA combined, which is one of them, part of the sample. And we spend some extra time on this precisely because it uses learning so actively in both the terms of reference and the actual evaluation process. But even then, it's kind of fascinating, really, how even when the terms of reference deliberately ask for learning and sets aside what seems to be quite a higher budgets, more time than usual also. Even then, the report ends up having to sort of delineate itself and use quite little of the sort of the stakeholders that they initially planned in the whole process and so forth. So it's even when the whole setup is designed to encourage learning and involve stakeholders in a much larger extent than usual. It was an evaluation of support to child rights. So they even had in the terms of reference to involve children, which is an added or an extra challenge, obviously, in an evaluation process. But still, the result was more conventional than they would have wanted. And the authors explicitly discuss the relation between accountability and learning and have some formulations that are very similar to what we end up concluding with it, how they are very different purposes and we want to focus on learning, not on accountability because of the problematic effects and so forth. So that's kind of a very interesting example we find. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. But I think, yes, you waited for a long time.
No, you just have to respond to Desmond, which I've known and respected for the last 20 years. So I don't think we have a huge difference of views. But my point is that this report displays a limited understanding of the evaluation process itself. And that is a bit worrisome, that this is not described as it actually is. And the other part of this is also the historic development. Evaluation is a fairly new discipline in Norway, even though the department I'm heading has its background from 1977. I made several attempts during the 90s to establish an evaluation society, but it was established only in 2008. And so it has been a huge development in the understanding of evaluation within the government organization in Norway. And that also, I think, is under-communicated, to put it that way, in the report. So so maybe I misunderstand the point, yes. I admit that.
Okay, thank you. It's good. You will not be fighting going out the door. very short comment, Joachim, yes?
No, I just felt it's important, this idea that we don't learn. I think it's a very strange one. I think there are lots of big learning going on in development, and our technical language itself is a proof of that. That is a professional language which encapsulates a lot of lessons learned. And I think also, why don't we act differently is a better question. For example, in humanitarian aid, we know that we should build more local capacity when we go into a humanitarian situation in order to foster development and resilience in the long term. But we don't do it, not because we don't know we should do it, but the incentive structures are not there. We have a lot of international NGOs who have such a profession to go in and help out in that way. We have politicians and citizens who demand that Sweden should go and do something after a catastrophe, etc. The problem is not that we don't know it or have learned it. The problem is an incentive problem instead.
Okay, so we can conclude that in fact, and just the evolution of evaluation practice in itself shows that there is learning ongoing, although it may not be the report may not be immediately instrumental in accomplishing change, but there is accumulation of knowledge, experiences, and knowledge coming from other parts, sort of research and so on, into what is sometimes called sort of streams of knowledge. That in fact a report and an evaluation process is just one element in the building of an activity that is based on evidence. And I think, actually what I wanted to finish with here is to ask you if you think that this report and this discussion will prompt you to rethink the way that you approach aid evaluation. I mean, is aid evaluation as currently practiced ripe for reconsideration? So, Per. Yes or no? I don't want sort of a long, but yes or no, actually.
I think I've answered that question.
No.
Okay. Okay, Evert, what do you think? No. Cecilia.
No, but...
Joachim?
No.
Okay, so you have at least you have not shattered the house here, obviously. Okay, so thank you very much. You're welcome to stay for another half hour. There will be coffee, I think, outside, and we can continue discussing. I also want to tell you that the next EVA seminar will be on the 29th of May. We'll be discussing two reports dealing with Swedish aid to research. You can go into our website sign up for it. And you can also sign up, which is very important, to get information on all our events and reports and what's going on at EVA. So thank you very much. And thank you very much for the panel. A big hand.